Welcome back to the guidebook, everybody. This week, we're talking to my friend Nick Lafferty. Nick is a growth marketing consultant and creator of Early Exit Club, a newsletter and community for solopreneurs. Nick and I met back when he worked at Loom. He actually hired me as a content writer there, and we've stayed in touch ever since. It's been so fun growing together as entrepreneurs. I highly recommend giving Nick a follow on LinkedIn and Substack if you haven't already. Those links are in the show notes and description below. In this episode, we cover what it felt like for Nick to leave his job, one that was seemingly perfect for him, how Nick got to $20,000 revenue months, how to know when it's the right time to take the leap into solopreneurship, and how to turn a layoff into a new career and maybe even triple your income. I hope that you love this interview as much as we loved recording it. Here it is, Nick Lafferty.
This is the guidebook. We're sharing tips for freelancers, raw conversations with risk takers, how to become a digital nomad, and the emotions behind it all. I'm your host, Rachel. On the show, I share everything I've learned in the past 5 years of freelancing and living nomadically, showing you how you can work to live instead of living to work. I'm interviewing some of my favorite digital nomads and entrepreneurs to help you unlock your bravest self. If you want to become a freelancer or a digital nomad, this is the podcast for you.
Hey everyone, I'm Nick. I am a growth marketer for SaaS startups from seed to series C-ish. I help with paid media, SEO, content marketing, affiliate marketing. For myself full-time, I quit my job in May of 2023 to go all in on myself. I had this bundle of money set aside to exercise my stock options in a startup I used to work at. And I was like, wow, this is a lot of money. I think instead of giving it to them, I'm going to keep it and use it to build my personal runway of building my own business, finding my own consulting clients, and ultimately building the life that I want to live and build, which is one that's not tied to someone else's schedule. I'm not building someone else's dream. I can take Fridays off if I want to. And so that's what I started out doing. And by the time this podcast comes out, I started with a goal of I want to make $20,000 a month in revenue from my business. And this month, I'll have just announced that I just hit that number.
That's amazing.
For the first time, which is I just kind of made that number up to be like totally honest with you. Like, oh, it sounds good. It's like over 200K a year. Like it's a nice goal to shoot for. And to hit that in roughly 5 months, that's how long it's been, is just incredible and a blessing. And so stoked about that.
Wow. 5 months?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's a little cheaty because I had some consulting work at the same time I had my full-time job before. So that carried over. So I wasn't starting from zero, but it's also the advice I give people of like don't just quit your job and then build something. Mm-hmm. Like try and build something so you have momentum into getting more time to work on it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. One of my former podcast guests called that ooching. She's from New Zealand. And it's like inching your way in, you know, you like you dip a toe and you
I like
dip
that.
A foot and you walk in slowly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. That's incredible, dude. So we know each other sort of. We are internet friends, I guess you could say. I applied to write for Loom when you used to work there and you hired me and you've actually referred me multiple clients since then, which is delightful and very helpful. And we've had like one coffee chat and it's really, I don't know, I think it's just a real testament to the types of connections that you can make online. Like I basically know you because of LinkedIn.
Yeah. It's funny. I just met a LinkedIn friend for lunch yesterday. Like they were in Austin. They sent me a note like, hey, I'm going to be around. Let's link up. And we met and hung out for like an hour and a half. It was great. And like I have met legit friends on LinkedIn and it's helped me from a business perspective. It's helped me from a career perspective. It's how I make friends. Like I think I'm also just better at making friends on the internet. I talk about this in my newsletter. Like if I go to a party and there's like more than four people there, like I just shut down. My brain just does not operate in like large people settings. Mm. And so to get one-on-one time talking like asynchronously or digitally or whatever, like I've been doing that since I was like 16 year old in like a, in like an IRC channel playing video games and stuff. And so like, I'm just like very, it comes easy for me. And so I'm always glad that when I like meet someone like you or like the vibe is there and we're like doing similar things. And so, I'm super glad that we met when I was at Loom and we could kind of continue to hang out and do fun stuff too.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's nice to just see, I feel like I develop better and more the more active I am on LinkedIn because those professional connections, like you are making so much more money than me. And it's really inspiring, and it like pushes me to do better and make more money. And like one of my friends that I met through LinkedIn, we're in real life friends now, and her goal is also to make 20K a month, and her minimum is 10K a month. And for me, for the longest time, 10K felt like unreachable. It felt like such a big goal. And I was like, it would be so major to make 10K a month. And now I've made it so many different ways and so many times that I'm like, it's easy. But you wouldn't get to that point if you didn't have inspiration, you hadn't seen someone do it before. I mean, you could, but it's so much easier to get there faster when the people around you are doing it, sharing their sauce as well. Like, it doesn't hurt me in any way to share how I made $10,000 a month. And to be able to share that like you do with your newsletter is so cool.
Yeah, it's the same for me. It's why I do it. It's why I want to share those numbers. It's like a brain hack. When I was younger, I used to not understand what it was like to have like $1,000 in my bank account. You know, I just had like a couple hundred, you know, and so I was like, oh, what is it like to have like to send $1 million wire transfer? It just seems like crazy thing that I have like never experienced before, but it's just like totally normal once you get there, if you're Jeff Bezos or whatever. And so like that's super helpful. And so that's also part of why I do it too. It's just to unmask, demystify. This is fine. I just stack a couple of consulting clients. I charge them more than other people do because I think my value and my service is there. And then LinkedIn is great too, because I don't know anyone in my area who's doing the same thing that I'm doing.
Yes.
Like, I hear this from everyone. I had my podcast and my newsletter subscribers tell this to me too. It's like, there's no one I live next to or around or is in my network locally that does what I want to do. And so to find those people on the internet is always so fun and rewarding. Like, oh, like you're doing the same thing I am. And you're actually way ahead of me in the like community I want to build. So like, teach me your community stuff and how you do that. And like, it's great to be able to learn from each other.
Yeah. I love that. Was your last job magical?
Yes.
Okay. What was it like to leave your job?
It was hard. It was really hard. So in some ways I don't tend to have regrets. I almost wish I didn't join Magical because it was it's a great company, great founders, and I came in and left without making the kind of impact that I'm used to having. Like I left a bunch of projects unfinished. It was like it was a little bit messy of a exit for me than I wanted to. Mm-hmm. So part of me, like when I was leaving Loom the December 5 months before that, I was like debating like, do I work for myself now? And I was like too scared to make the jump, even though like the income was fine. I had more affiliate money coming in at that point too. I couldn't do both. I couldn't work full time and build my own business. That it was time. I was like, okay, I need to tell my boss. And the conversation was hard to always have that of like, hey, like I know I just joined, but like I just can't. Like I'm just ready to leave. And then the emotions before that was like roller coaster
of course.
It's like some days I was like, I'm gonna quit. I hate working for other people. I hate shitty meetings. Like it sucks. And then other days, like the day was great. Like some campaign I launched was just crushing. I'm like, oh, I love this, you know. So it's just like seesaw back and forth of like good days and bad days. And the day I quit was rough. I like quit and then walked out and talked to my wife and I was like, what did I just do? Like, I don't what is like, am I crazy? Is this all going to work out? Like, because for me, I had all this affiliate income in like the early part of the year and it had been decreasing steadily like every month. And I quit in May and my affiliate income was the lowest it's been in like a year.
Oh,
and so like
no.
From a numbers standpoint, it didn't make any sense why I was quitting. And thankfully it all worked out now, but like in the moment it was rough. And then afterwards, like total no-brainer. Like I wish I would have done it sooner now, right? So like once I was through, I think this is true for a lot of people too. Once you get through the other side and you see success, you put the time in, you're kind of forcing yourself to make it work, that it's all worth it in the end. But in the moment, it was pretty tough.
Yeah. It's a real roller coaster. Honestly, not to make this too personal, but this reminds me of breaking up with your partner or something. Like all the feelings that you're describing, like one of my friends is going through a breakup and I just see, like you can just like map that onto a romantic relationship. It's the same thing.
Well, like, I'm pretty sure I use the words, it's not you, it's me, you know?
So. Yeah.
It's true though. It's true. It wasn't that like the co-founders were amazing. They were super cool. The culture was great. Mm-hmm. Like everything, it checked all the boxes. I was like making good salary. Despite all of that, it still made more sense for me to go work for myself. And I talk about this in my newsletter too. Like there's always a thing. There's always a reason not to do something. And like you just have to do it anyway.
Yeah. What would you say? What are your feelings about the phrase right time? Do you think that there is a right time to do things like this?
The right time is always now. It's always the always. So there isn't a right time because it's always right now. And I was big into like Casey Neistat. I still am. I still very much admire and like oh, Casey yes. Neistat's like journey. And there's like, I have this whole video and quote, a whole newsletter about like the right time is now. And it's like totally true. Like my parents were skeptical of me wanting to do this and to like break the news to them. Like, can you really work for yourself? Can you really make money? Can you really not have like a 20-year career with one company anymore? Which now seems like totally crazy that that was even a thing, but it's like.
It's insane. I could not imagine having to work at one company for 20 years. Like, I know things would change there and everything, but not enough.
No,
not for me.
definitely not. And so no, like the right time is always right now. There's always a reason not to do one of those things. And it's like the hardest thing. You just have to like find this wall and just like smash through it, because otherwise, like for me, my fear was I don't want to have the regret of what if, what could have happened if I didn't do this thing. And now I kind of carry that mantra with myself in a lot of different places. Like my wife and I are trying to move to New York City right now because like the time is good. The income is good. We want to move like to a city and be in a more walkable area and like by our best friends and stuff. And it's, you know, we don't have kids. And so the time is, if we don't do this now, I don't want to live in regret of like, what if we never do this? And like always just think back, oh, we should have, or we could have.
I completely relate to that. I never worked up the courage to quit my job. I got laid off because of COVID.
Okay.
And honestly, if that didn't happen, like I have no idea where I would be right now, but I'm so glad it did. It was like the most terrifying thing ever. I actually found in my like Instagram story archives, the video of the day that I got laid off. And I just was trying so hard to like keep it together on Instagram, but I was like freaking out, and none of my clients had paid me yet. And I was like, oh no, I have like 7 clients. If none of them pay, like, what if they don't pay me? You know, and it all came through and it was totally fine. But within months, I had more than tripled my income. Yeah. It was insane because I didn't have any choice but to make it work. And I feel like a lot of people will like enter my coaching programs and be like, okay, so I'm still going to work my job until I find the right time to do this. And I get it. If you have no writing experience and you have no business strategy, you have no business plan, like whatever, yes, keep your job for a while. But by the end of the program, like 6 months in, they're all still like, well, I don't know when I'm going to quit my job. And I'm like, okay, then you're going to have a part-time business. You're going to have a part-time forever until you do it, you know?
Yeah.
And it's such a terrifying thing to do, especially if you have people depending on you. But for the most part, most people I coach are just like individual human beings. And I swear, like if I had quit being a barista like 2 years before and had just pushed myself to get off of Upwork and get clients through LinkedIn earlier, I would have been just as successful just like 3 years earlier. It's insane.
Well, I mean, that was me. Like I was burning the candle on both ends. And like what happened is like I was doing a shitty job at my full-time company. I was doing a shitty job building my own business. And that went on for a while. And like, I just wasn't happy with that. Like I wasn't giving anything like the right effort. And then when I looked at it, like, what do I want to put my time into? Do I want to work for somebody else? Do I want to build my own business? Like the choice then was obvious. And I had some income coming in. I had some like savings to kind of like fund me, you know, for at least a year at that point. Like it's probably longer if I really strip down like that. Yeah. The savings, like emergency fund part of it was big. And you just have to do it. And like so many people are in that situation now where they like have some side income now, or they've been laid off. Like one of my friends got laid off. It's been a few months now. And one of the things he told me is that like, I never want to be in this situation ever again where I get laid off and I have zero income from there. Yeah. And so like the, you know, drive to build any kind of side hustle, side income, passive income stream, whatever, I think is really high. And layoffs are also really high. And so I think this will create hopefully lots of like solopreneurs, freelancers, and like more people giving themselves a shot versus jumping back into the job market, which is a little rough right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really hard to get a job right now. And every application is like flooded.
Yeah.
I will say too, like there's nothing wrong with freelancing part-time or starting a side hustle or like wanting to have a full-time job or needing the structure or the stability or the benefits or whatever it is. But it always, my excuses red flag always goes up when people say, oh, it's just not the right time.
Yeah.
There are situations in which it may genuinely not be the right time, but most of the time it's not that it's not the right time. It's just about what you're doing with the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't think everyone is like built or ready for to, you know, self-employment and all the stuff.
Yeah.
It's a lot. Like you have to be your own marketing person, your own salesperson, your own like accounting, bookkeeping person. Mm-hmm. Like I like finances. I like doing taxes and I'm like a weirdo in that way. Like, not
yeah,
everyone,
you are.
Not everyone enjoys it. Cause like I like to see like the mechanics behind it. And like, I've always liked like savings and investment and stuff. Like not everyone is like that, and that's like a real thing where like the first of the month is me doing invoices and sending stuff out and like kind of categorizing all of my transactions and stuff, and like you have to kind of enjoy that or at least be ready for the reality of what that is. And like my pay maybe similar to you is super lumpy. Like I don't get a paycheck on the 15th and the 30th. Like some people pay me the second I send them an invoice, which I love those people. They're my favorite.
Me too.
Like, you know, like
yes.
Immediate. And then some people will pay me like 7 days later via like ACH bank transfer that takes then a 7 more days to hit my bank account. And so it's like
yeah.
the month that comes in. And one client I was talking with was like a net 45 payment
yeah.
schedule. I'm like, I can't, like, this is rough, man. Like, I don't
net
know if 45 I can take
are
this.
The worst.
Yeah.
And they're always, every net 45 client I've ever had has paid late. Every single invoice, every fucking one of them. I don't understand why. It's like you have a month and a half to pay me. More than a month, a day over a month and a half. Let me tell you, you got time to pay me.
and it's rough. And like that is tough. So like, I don't know, like I kind of take like the budgeting perspective of like, I want to spend the money this month that I earned last month. So I'm kind of like a month ahead a little bit, which
I
helps.
Would love
like, I don't need
position.
This paycheck to land today for me to like fund my lifestyle, because it's variable. Like sometimes it comes in fast, sometimes it comes in slow. I don't want that to dictate like my happiness or well-being.
Yeah, it's stressful. I talked to another guest about this, our differences in how we budget and things like that. I am behind. I'm always like honestly spending out of next month, and I have pretty much my whole career. I grew up like paycheck to paycheck. I had no idea how to manage money. My parents don't even have credit cards. My parents don't have credit.
Wow.
And it's insane. I don't understand how they live, but it's like so important to actually get financially literate before you do these things. Like I got my first credit card and I fucked it up. And like, you're going to learn by experience, and maybe everyone, you know, maxes out a credit card and carries it around for 2 years. Maybe they do, but the mistakes, like they hold a lot of gravity. Like it's not just the fact that you maxed out your credit card and you're carrying around $2,000 worth of interest a year. And you're paying that, and you're also not paying the credit card. There's also the impact to your credit score and your mental well-being, and like just constantly being behind and not feeling like you can catch up is so frustrating and
yeah.
challenging.
Well, it's this like mental load you like carry with you all the time of like, it's just your debt is just there. And so like, not being able to clear it out and like get ahead is like a true barrier.
Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, like, money mindset is huge as an entrepreneur, especially if you're going solo. But there's something about financial literacy that I was not prepared to have to learn as a solo entrepreneur. I don't know why. Like, I know that obviously it's important whether you get paid a regular paycheck or not. Like, we're all budgeting. We all have a certain amount of money. We all have to manage our credit properly, whatever. But as someone who doesn't get regular paycheques, like, I hesitate to turn on autopay ever, even though I kind of have to in a lot of circumstances. It's like terrifying to me. I'm fine now because I've gotten to a point where my income is high enough that like it sort of outweighs this like push and pull I've been in, but it's not like, it's not fun. And I've had to experiment a lot. Like, I finally think I figured out a solution to how I want to budget and manage my money. And it's very flexible and fluid. And I have to like sort of make changes to it frequently to make sure it's matching what I'm doing. But essentially everything that comes in, I just divide it into 6 reserves in my bank account automated.
Yeah.
So it's like proportional. Like I always have 20% of my income to spend on groceries. I always have 10% of my income or 20% of my income going to my rent, so that even if that goes above $1,500 this month, then that just helps me later be able to pay rent later, right?
Yeah.
Or like my taxes come out automatically. And that – don't use your tax savings as an emergency fund.
No.
Don't learn that the hard way. Don't be dumb, guys. Don't ever touch your tax fund, ever.
Yeah.
There are tax payment plans. That's fine. But like – and I've used them. But now if you get a tax payment plan, then it's harder to pay next year's taxes. And you can kind of like get trapped in like just having to get a tax payment plan every year if you don't just have the funds. But I cannot believe how much I have learned about money because of this job.
Yeah. I mean, so that's kind of like what you just described was to me what I know is like the envelope method where like you get paid and you make envelopes and you like shove money in there. Like this is my fund money. This is my mortgage. This is my whatever. And like that works. Like I have friends who did that for a long time. Like the software plug I'll give if you or anyone else listening is like that or interested in envelope method or like spending money this month that you made last month, like getting a month ahead is called YNAB. Like you need a budget.
Oh yes. Uh-huh. I've used you need a budget.
And YNAB is great for that. Of like the first thing you do when you sign up, you get like 31 days or 34 days to fix your budget. Of like they make you save and put away money to pay for their tool, you know, because it's a yearly thing, and that kind of like sets you up to do it. And like that is so helpful for just categorizing, and like you have to know where your money is going to be able to, you know, envelope and like spend and save correctly. And some people just like swipe and don't, you know, keep track of that stuff. So that is super helpful. And like I'm the same way where a lot of like I am not great from like a budgeting perspective. Like I want to live a life where I can generally buy and do whatever I want, whatever
I
want.
Of course, we all do,
right? And to do that, like I need to make a lot of money. Like I need to earn a lot. I need 20K plus. You know, I'm still very careful. I save, I invest, I like dump a ton into like investments and stuff. But that's what drives me to raise my rates or have hard pricing conversations is this little thing in the back of my head of like, no, you need this so you can be comfortable. So you're not just like penny pinching and like micromanaging every dollar. So you have that mental space, that mental freedom. And that's what drives me to raise my rates and like do all that stuff because I don't want to do that.
Perspective on that. It scares people to raise their rate. I have had about a million pep talks in the past 3 years with people who are scared to raise their rate. It's like half my job is just giving people pep talks about their rates and how low they are. And honestly, the majority of people who struggle with this that I know are women, unfortunately. But like that, I have actually never heard anyone talk about it from that perspective. I mean, I do teach my clients to, I have like created a rates calculator in Google Sheets where first you put in all of your personal expenses. And if you don't know what they are to a T, I encourage spending tracking. Like I tracked my spending for a year and I'm doing it again because I just moved. So my expenses have changed, of course. And it was so eye-opening because when I thought I was making a realistic budget, when I thought I was like writing down my expenses realistically in the rates calculator, I was so wrong. I was like, oh yeah, well, I'll probably spend like $300 a month on groceries. Try 600, bitch.
Oh.
Who do you think you are? You're buying the bougie peanut butter. Don't lie to me. Don't lie to yourself.
Shopping at Whole Foods.
It's one of those things that like you can think optimistically about it and then not make enough money, or you can just be realistic with yourself and what you want and what you need. And so you put in your personal expenses, your business expenses, your debt minimum monthly payments, and then the rates calculator, you put in how many billable hours you want to work each month, and it will calculate a rate for you. And every single person who has used it with me on a live call, their face when they get to the calculator tab is like that's how much I should be charging?
Yeah.
What?
I know. And yeah, and like, you know, there's other people charging that rate out there. Like one of the really enlightening things about me hiring freelance writers at Loom is whether this was a good move or not. Like when people applied to us, I asked them to include their rate because like I want to know, like, and one, the people that charged more consistently had above average work, like compared to everyone, like their quality was just better. So there's kind of like a self-selection of like, you charge more because you know you're worth it. The people that were on the low end, the quality was typically below average too. And like, I had to tie it all back to like the fixed budget I had. So I kind of had to like make the math work to get the most output while also like, to me, paying quality writers fairly too. But like seeing the variances in what people charge of like freelance writers of like, I don't know, 4 cents a word, 5 cents a word to 40 cents to 70 cents. And like, they're doing the same job, but the rate is different. So what's so different about that person charging 70 cents or something higher than the other person? Like the output is definitely different, but like the work is the same. So how do you mentally bridge that gap and say, no, like I am worth this amount and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah. It's huge. I mean, I coach freelancers. Of course, I see the whole range.
Yeah.
And it's wild to see like my friend Katie makes like her, she's the one whose minimum is $10,000 a month. And what she is charging for her retainers per hour for like creative brand copywriting blows my mind. I literally used to do her job for a coding boot camp, and they like, they started me off as like a junior support copywriter. And then by the time I left a year later, all of my seniors had quit that were actual employees. So now I'm a freelancer on retainer, basically doing a senior copywriter's job, which is insane and not okay in any way, but that's regardless. And I tried to raise my rates. I doubled my rates basically because I was like, this is appropriate. And they were like, nope, don't do that. And it was so discouraging for me. We ended up ending the contract. Mm-hmm. And like 2 years later, I meet Katie. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I was not wrong. I just wasn't the right client.
Yep. It was the client fit of like, sometimes it's easier just to find a new client at your new rate versus kind of raising or dealing with a shitty client. Like the more price sensitive they are is generally more of a red flag. Like I had someone try and negotiate my rate a week or two ago, and I just said, no, like the rate is this. It's like my rate is a function of my experience, not of like whatever you're doing. If you can't afford your problem, you know? But one of my friends emailed me a week or two ago too, if he has a current client that is taking like 40 hours a month from him or more of time. And he wants to move his hours with them down and move his hourly rate up. And they were cool with moving the hours down, but they weren't cool with moving the rate up to kind of compensate. Of like, you know, the math is easy there of like, you're getting a bulk discount by buying this many hours more or less. And so less hours means I need to increase my rate. And they were just like, not cool with it. Like they just put up a big stink, even though like on the net, they'd be paying less to him per month, even at like lower hours, higher rates than they were now, they still weren't cool with it. And so sometimes those conversations are so hard to navigate and just easier to try and find someone new who just is cool with paying your rate, you know, your higher rate.
Yeah. I think there's a big fear, especially when you're in your first, I would say like 3 years of like finding clients. Like it doesn't feel guaranteed that you're going to find another client when you're in that situation sometimes, even though like, it is pretty much guaranteed. You might have to like try some different things, but what are you not going to get another client? You would not have a business. What you're doing would not be sustainable. You shouldn't be doing it at all if that's genuinely what you believe, right? But our scarcity mindsets can kick in and we get scared, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I have a scarcity mindset right now. Like I'm a little paranoid that not all of my clients will stick around. So like, while I'm grateful, like I'm at this income milestone, like it's in the back of my head of like, oh man, like one or two of these could drop out, which is what motivates me to find and say yes to other clients too. So I have like a large enough buffer. But like, I mean, I've definitely have not been doing this for 3 years, but even at like the monthly income I'm at now, like it's still there, you know? And so it's real.
Yeah. Yeah. Those fears are very real. I wanted to ask you, what's something that you learned in your previous big boy jobs that helped you the most in working for yourself?
Yeah. A couple of things. One is saying no. I think that some people are so eager to say yes and just to be the person that will say yes and get stuff done. And what I found is saying no, pushing back. And this is, I think, even more important as a consultant of like, you need to push back against your client when like they have a dumb idea or like, this isn't like, you know, something isn't good or like the right approach. Like they're paying you for your perspective and your results to challenge them. Right. And so you have to be able to counter and say no and have those difficult conversations. And that took me a while to get to and get better at. Like I was the person who was saying yes to like new projects and would end up like working late and like extra hours. And eventually I was like, what am I doing? Like none of this stuff correlates to actual like raises or promotions or any of that. Like the person who says like the yes person gets laid off just as easily as the person who the no person, you know, like it doesn't matter at that point. So that was one thing. And then internally that I'm now glad that I'm kind of through the other side of this is like how good of a job people think you're doing is just as important as the actual job that you're doing. Like how people perceive you as being successful or good at your job or smart is like 50% of doing well internally or at any job. And so there's that like confidence factor, where one, if you can't speak with confidence in a meeting, or if you don't know your numbers off the top of your head, like if you're in like a quarterly review or whatever, if you can't like rattle off all of the stuff and just be quick with it, then like that affects the confidence and how people perceive you. And then they think you're not as good as you probably are. You just don't have like the right confidence to do it. And so that was something that one of my managers at Loom taught me. It's like that took me, you know, 8 years, you know, to get to that point of like learning that like that confidence is important. Like I was always more confident writing than I was speaking in person at meetings, like executives or CEOs and all of that stuff. And so that was like a skill that took a long time for me to develop. That's also important as a consultant too, because if your client doesn't think you're good, you know, if they're not confident, then they're going to inch your contract, you know, a little bump.
Or they just won't hire in the first place.
Yeah.
It's important before, during, and after.
Yeah, exactly. So it's those two things for sure.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge. I think the confidence thing, it's just so easy to give into imposter syndrome when you're starting out. Even now, I still sometimes battle with it, or like compare myself to other people I see on LinkedIn. And with this new endeavor, I haven't really talked about it a lot on the podcast or like publicly at all. But I've been sort of like starting the beginning steps of building an agency, and for this project, this is basically the third business that I've started. I don't want to compare myself to other agencies. I want to look to them to grow and be inspired and to network and find support and to talk about what we're going through and how we can improve and how you can bring your clients results. Yes, but I don't want to put my self-worth on the line. Like I want to charge what we need to charge to reasonably pay our writers fairly and also get clients that we love and also pay ourselves a reasonable wage. And I want to like be able to do that without feeling shitty.
Yeah.
It's so hard. And I feel like it shouldn't be this difficult to not do that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like I struggle with it too. Like when I was terrified of joining Loom, like I got the job offer, accepted. And then also like same thing as when I quit my job, I was like, what did I just do? You know, like this major SaaS company that's growing super fast, is super well known, is bringing me on to run all of their paid ads, all of their SEO, all of their affiliate marketing, which when I say it out loud, it's like, why is that just one person's job? You know, like,
seriously,
it should have been a couple of people. But then the deeper into it I got, I still had imposter syndrome when I was there too. But then it's like what I realized is like at that point I was never alone. Like it was never all on me. If like even though I launched the ads, I did the SEO, I hired the writers, like it was not all on me. I had a team, I had my manager, I had my coworkers, I had like other people there to lean on. And if you join the right team, you have the right co-founder for your agency, then like you can lean on them. So it's never just on you. But yeah, same thing happened to me when I was at Loom, and I was there for 2 years, and like I was generally successful and like pretty good at what I tried to do there, despite what my brain was trying to tell me I was.
Yeah, yeah. Do you still struggle with imposter syndrome as someone who's self-employed?
I haven't felt it the same. And some of it is I'm not in a lot of meetings. I think I would feel it when I was in big meetings with like VPs of product or people like outside of my immediate team. When we were talking about like numbers or when things weren't going well, I would be like, man, I fucking suck, dude. it was very much like externally created. Like I was at least like internalizing all this like external stuff that wasn't necessarily directed at me as a person. It might've been like the results of a campaign I did or some like work related output thing, but I was like way too in my head about internalizing all of that stuff. And then part of it was, I felt it the most when I was at Loom during that like year of Loom laid off. I had two rounds of layoffs when I was there. I had to lay off my team. And so there was
that's
like all
this so scary
contraction going on in the market. And so like revenue was going down, like signups, like all the numbers were going down. So the environment itself was negative. And so I think that kind of contributed to some of it too. But now like I don't feel it as much because things are going good. I haven't lost a client so far. It's bound to happen. Like something is going to happen where I go from the number I'm at now to the number minus one, you know, for whatever reason. And like it might creep in then, but then I have other clients who can fill the gap, and I'm driving success for so many of them. Like it's hard for that stuff to creep in. but mm-hmm. it's probably bound to happen eventually. But thankfully not yet.
The best part about that too is like if you're already seeing results for your clients and you're doing a good job and you can present that. Like I love telling people to create, don't make a portfolio, make a collection of case studies.
Yeah.
Like who are your clients? What did you do for them? What were the results you got for them? What was their goal? What did they give you to do your job well? Mm-hmm. And if you're the results like really speak volumes to potential clients. So if you're gathering that, it's like, even if you lose these clients, you're still going to be able to get quality clients because you're doing a quality job and you know how to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Like getting that feedback, like one of my clients just opened like a $300,000 like sales opportunity off a lead I helped him generate, which is like sick. I love it.
It's so like, so good.
It's a crazy number. And like, if that closes, you know, then like that becomes a part of like my case study with this client of like, hey, this is what I helped them do and, you know, grow their open pipeline to be 10X what they spent on ad. Like, I hit all their goals basically. And then, so that's the client side. And then this might be true for you on the community side too, but for my newsletter on my homepage, I started taking social proof from people who responded to my newsletter or like left comments on LinkedIn that was like, I love this. It's so inspiring. Mm-hmm. So I have like a wall of love on my like newsletter homepage.
That's so sweet.
Now. Yeah. So like, I'll look at that now of like, I am actually helping people and that's super motivating. And I think that is probably what's staving off the imposter syndrome so much because I've built this feedback loop between me and my subscribers of mm-hmm. I take their feedback. It's all positive. And so that just drives me to go create and to build more and more. And so I think that's helpful too.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to ask you about Early Exit Club, but before we do, there's one last corporate-y question I have for you. A lot of people, when they first become a freelance writer or just like a freelancer in general, they worry that they don't have the skills or the experience to freelance and they feel like they don't know what they're doing, even though sometimes they do, but sometimes they just don't have the skills at all. How did you learn how to do your job as a growth marketer? Did you learn most of that on the job? Did you go to college? Like, how did you get those skills?
Yeah, I did not learn it in college. I went to school for economics. I was like generally a really shitty student. It was like things were bad for me in college. I went to grad school because I wasn't ready to have a full-time job. So I just didn't want to enter the reality. And then I kind of always had marketing jobs in the background. Like I worked for FM radio station in college doing promotions, which was like kind of like, you know, pseudo in-person like event marketing. But all the digital paid ad stuff I learned after I got my first full-time job. So in a sense, like college wasn't valuable from like a skill set perspective. I've never taken like a writing course either. And I would kind of put my writing skills as like above average as well, both of like communication of like on Slack with clients and like long form blog post stuff too. And that was just practice in reps too. And so I learned all of it on the job and like finding ways to get experience, try new things, test things in a safe environment. Like my whole career, I've spent other people's money on advertising. I've never spent my own money to do any of this stuff, you know? And so I've gone to conferences and things, but nothing I learned in school. I learned by doing, I learned by saying yes to opportunities. Like the way I got into running Google ads, I was on the data team at my very first company doing like data analysis, building dashboards. Yeah, I know is super random because I had an economics degree. I was a data person.
Like,
I
wasn't it makes sense, but like now looking backwards, it's like what?
It's so wild. And like I wasn't even that good at it either. Like I just like one of my friends is like the most brilliant math minded person ever, who was just so good at like data and data science. And like I was just like very much comparing myself to him and like not as good. But he's a shitty writer, so like we all like
you can't win them all.
It all evens out, you know. And like I was doing that, and the CEO of the company emailed me on a Saturday morning. He's like, "Hey Nick, our paid search person is leaving. I know you've never done this before, but would you be open to like learning and trying, and we like bring in a consultant to help you?" And so in one way, like he helped me be successful if he gave me the right like surrounding people to teach me and go through all that stuff. But like I said yes to that, like not knowing what would happen afterwards. Turns out I was great at it. It was like the perfect fit for me. And now it's the foundation of all of my consulting work is still running Google ads for people. This thing that I randomly stumbled into like 8 or so years ago at this point.
And that's incredible.
It's just like saying yes to opportunities and trying to see if it works for you.
Yeah. I had a very similar experience. I mean, I've never had a real job, but real job in quotations. I was freelancing, I was like writing for coding boot camps, and I connected with someone at one. I had followed up with them like 5 times over the course of a year, and they never responded to any of my messages on LinkedIn. And finally, the 5th time I followed up, they were like, oh my God, perfect timing. Thank you so much for being so persistent. This was like the golden ticket for me to ruthlessly follow up forever after. Like, this guy made me feel good about it.
Totally.
He was like, yeah, we do have an opening for writers. I'll send you the application. It turned out it was like a full-time job, but I just applied anyway. And I went in and I was like, I'm a freelancer. I'm not going to work for you full-time. This is how I would do it if you wanted that. And it was for email copywriting, which I didn't realize until I showed up to the meeting. And I had never done email copywriting before. I knew fucking nothing about email marketing. I'm in a sit, like literally in the job interview. No idea what I'm doing. And I was like, listen, I've never done this before. I'll give you a good rate. We can just have a retainer. I'll give you office hours, you know, when you can Slack me. You'll pay me hourly and I'll fucking learn. Like, it's a junior copywriter position. How hard could it be?
Yeah.
And they hired me, which is shocking to me, honestly, still. And I learned so much from that job, and I basically got paid to learn how to be an email marketer. And obviously, like, I had to do research on the side and practice and like find my way around email marketing. But like, I also obviously learned things from the people I was working with, but it's absolutely incredible what you can get paid to learn. Like, you don't have to necessarily know everything about a skill. You just need to do your best and be willing to research and maybe get paid a lower rate at first so that it's more palatable for the client to experiment with you.
That's how a lot of my like SEO friends learned, is like they got a job, you know, right out of college or like, you know, very junior positions, and they got taught SEO by working in like a larger company to do all of that stuff. And now they run their own websites, they do consulting, they're digital nomads. And so like they just learned on the job and took this skill to go with them. And they like traded that like lower salary, you know, maybe not ideal working environment for a chance to learn a skill and get paid a little bit for it. And then like, that's everything of like the opportunity to do that is more valuable than like a higher paycheck or something else. Like, you can learn a new skill and someone can help teach you, or you have the right like mentor or environment to do that. That's what happened to me. And so now that I'm more senior, I try and give those opportunities to other people. I try and take chances on people that might not check all the boxes, but seem really driven and eager to learn. So now I'm like looking for those attributes when I'm like doing other things or hiring freelance writers or advising companies too. And so I take that mindset with me of like, someone took a chance on me, and so like it worked, and so there's other people who deserve chances too, and so how do you like open those doors?
Yeah, that's really cool. I do appreciate the way that you sort of passed on to others. I want to talk about Early Exit Club. Tell me about it. What is it?
The Early Exit Club was an idea I had. I was working out at the gym trying to figure out like what's the right marketing brand wrapper to put around this thing I want to do. And it's based on the idea that as a startup employee, I was always looking for an exit, like a liquidation event that would turn my imaginary stock options into real dollars in my bank account. I've still yet to participate in one of those. And it feels so like out of your control as an employee. It's like you get options, you help the company grow, but like that company can't sell unless the CEO and the board or whatever like decides like now is the time, this is all right. So you have no control over that kind of like outcome. So I was like, screw this. I'm over it. I'm over like waiting for someone else to kind of like manufacture my exit. Because for me, I wanted that money to retire early and like do my own thing. And like retirement for me is not working. It's just, I don't want to have to work for a paycheck. I want to just do my own thing and explore my own passions. And so thus the Early Exit Club was born, when I was like, I want to exit early. I'm going to exit the workforce early. I'm going to have my own like liquidity event, in a sense of like, I'm not going to need a full-time job anymore. And now it's a community of over 800 people that are current or aspiring freelancers, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs who want to work for themselves, build their own income, quit their jobs, do what you and I are doing right now. And a weekly newsletter where I share my experience, I share my income, the ups and downs of the whole journey. And eventually we'll hope to build my own community too, where everyone who subscribes can kind of like talk to each other and learn from each other. So it's not like a broadcast of me like one to many. It's like many to many kind of like organic connections. And so that's the Early Exit Club.
I love it. This is so good. You've had some really good topics lately as well. Like, I had no I mean, I've never worked, I've worked as a freelancer for startups, but I've never had a job at a startup. So talking about things like stock options, I had no idea. I knew about solo 401ks, but I hadn't really looked into it for myself. Mm-hmm. Like there's just been so many things, raising your rates.
Yeah.
You've talked about a lot of stuff that I feel like is important, but you do it in an approachable way. Like I've read about solo 401ks so many times, couldn't give two shits less. I'm not going to deal with that. And then when I read yours, I was like, oh, this seems like really easy and silly for me to not do in the future when I'm making more money.
It's really that on my list. It's really simple. You know, it's like, that's the thing. Like these things are stuff I've spent time researching and learning. So some of this is like me distilling my knowledge in an easy to understand way. Cause that's how I want to, like, if my friend was over, I would explain solo 401ks in the same way that I did in my newsletter of like, oh dude, it's like you save on your taxes, you get to invest in all the same ways. Like, I don't want to pay more taxes. So like, hell yeah, like, I'm going to shove some money in there, you know? And then like options is still a very like new mysterious thing to me. But the fact that I've like negotiated equity in a few companies now as a freelancer and they've said yes to me is like mind blowing. And so I'm like, I need to talk about this. I need to share it with people. And there's risks and pros and cons to that. Like if you're not making enough money to support yourself, then don't like take the haircut on your rate in exchange for this like imaginary equity. Cause the honest answer is like 98% of startups fail or like whatever the number is. Yeah. But like if one of them works and you like have managed to negotiate a decent amount, from like, you know, 0.5% to 1%, depending on like the early stage of the company and stuff, like it could be like a significant financial windfall. And if you stack a couple of those, like into like lottery tickets, you know, like maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't, but it's kind of fun to know you own like a little tiny piece of a company somewhere.
It's really cool. Yeah. My friend worked for Shipt for a long time and they got bought out by Target and she was like not expecting that to happen, of course. And the windfall from that was massive.
Yeah.
It's like, where else are you going to get, aside from lottery tickets or investing in the stock market, where else are you going to get something like that, you know?
Totally. And like, you know, when a company gets bought, like the founders or president or whatever, some people make out really well. And then some people get shit. Like some people get nothing. Like one of the companies I worked at, they only gave equity to directors and above. And I was not a director. I didn't get it. I was fighting very hard for it. It just never happened. They got bought for $2 billion at some point. And people that had equity was like six-figure, seven-figure payouts. People that didn't have equity, like a couple thousand. Like they got a bonus from like the CEO of like, oh, we sold, congratulations. And like they described it to me as like they could pay off their credit card money, not like house down payment money or like pay off their house money, you know? Yeah. So it's the difference between having a like actual financial windfall and just having like a nice like spot bonus, you know? So like, why not like advocate for yourself and try and put yourself in a position where you can gain that way if it does happen? You know, not every company sells for $2 billion, but shit, man. Like, you know, if you're at Figma and you just got acquired for like $20 billion or whatever, seriously, like you're pretty happy, at, you know, at that point if that goes through. And I think everyone should share in like the success of a company like that. And so you can ask, you know, and sometimes founders will say no or not right now. Like one of my clients, I asked early on and they said they were open to it. And it took until July of this year for the like actual paperwork and like the conversation to really happen. So it took 7 months from like ask to, you know, it going through. And some of that was like us feeling out like if this is a good long-term fit. Like, am I as good as I proclaim to be at the job that I do?
Yeah.
And eventually they said yes. And I own like a tiny, tiny percent of a couple startups now. I have the option to buy it. It's kind of like the right term of like, I can purchase these shares if I really want to, but I have the option to, and that's everything.
That's so cool. Yeah. I really enjoy the fact you feel like a non-competitive spirit, and also like the way that you approach things. I don't know if you would call it necessarily like a self-care standpoint, but you're like looking out for your best self in your business, in your rates, in how much work you take on, and saying no and working with clients that you actually want to work with, in like advocating for stock options and all these things. It's like sort of a self-care approach, but it's also like you're not doing it to the detriment of others. You're not really competing with anyone, and you're also not really being selfish because you're sharing your knowledge and like mentoring people and giving other people opportunities. I just find it so refreshing and interesting because I feel like there are so many LinkedIn bros that are just assholes that are out for themselves. And you're still getting what you want and need, but you're not out for yourself. You're caring for yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like, I think that creates more opportunities for me than if I was out for myself. Like the fact that I am so open and sharing and just generally want to help people means that other people want to help me and promote my stuff, which is great. Like, I don't ask anyone to do any of that, but like, that's just what naturally comes back when you put out like good vibes in the universe. Like they tend to come back for you. And some of that is like, I just want to build the business and be the person that like, I want to be friends with, that like I want to interact with. And that's born of like experiences of the other side of like working with shitty people or, you know, having shitty experiences. And so I just want to do that. And none of this is zero sum. Like if I land a client, chances are like, it doesn't mean like I prevented anyone else from landing that client. I mean, like sometimes like I am competing with other mysterious people and sometimes they win, sometimes I win, but like in like 99% of times, like my success doesn't mean you also can't be successful. It's like plenty of the pie to go around, and we're all better if we can all like share and talk about stuff, like talk about salary and money and how much you make and like all of that stuff. Like we're all better off if we can have open, honest conversations. And that's kind of like the ethos of what I want to do, is just like transparently share. And like my wife thinks I'm crazy, my parents think I'm crazy of like, hey honey, I want to tell 800 people how much money we made last month and like where our money went. Like, are you cool with that? And she's like, I guess, dude, like I trust you. So like, okay, like it's worked out now. Like she is actually cool with it now, but
yeah,
it's scary and weird, but like it helps everyone. And in turn, it will help me in the long term too. And so it's everyone wins.
Yeah, that's really sweet. I really like that. My last question for you, what's the number one thing you'd tell someone who's like considering leaving their job or want to work for themselves?
It's scary. Like the act of leaving is scary, but I think it's also probably one of like the bravest things you could do. And so if you actually go through with it, if you think through, I have like a 4-step checklist of like, should you quit your job? Are you ready? It's like, do you have an emergency fund? Do you have some clients lined up? Have you been tracking your expenses? You know, like if you have all the boxes checked, so to speak, then you're ready, and you can keep telling yourself that you're not ready. You can make up all these excuses and stuff, but the difference between being successful and or not is taking action, I found. And so like you just have to do it and take the step and take action. And more often than not, you'll be better off that you did versus being the person that always talks about doing something and then never actually doing it. And like the action is what differentiates, you know, successful people who do well. It's funny. Yeah. I was looking at one of my friends just got a job at a place where we have a bunch of like common coworkers. When we all used to work together, we had a great experience. And I sent, they posted the perfect job for me, like director of growth marketing. And I sent them the thing. I was like, oh, let's get the band back together. You know, like it's all work together again, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, do it. You won't do it, but do it. And I was like, dude, like they couldn't pay me enough. Like at this point, like I'm too expensive. Like if I were to take a full-time job, like it would be way more than they would pay for that role. And so like, in that sense, like, why would I ever go back? Because I make more and have more freedom now than if I was tied to a full-time company. And I'm blessed to be in this position now, but I'm here because I did it. I took the leap. I had that bit of bravery and a lot of hard work and dedication and luck involved, but like I did it, and that's the difference. And so that's what I would tell people is just do it.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I completely agree. Action is the key. It's the only key. There's no silver bullet. There's no perfect plan. There's no right answer. All of that will change all the time, consistently throughout your career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But action won't. Like that's the one thing that always works, is just like sitting and doing, or standing and doing.
Standing. Like you and me are both standing right now. So
yeah.
You
know? Okay. So, do you have a checklist? Did you just mention that?
Kind of. So like what I have is like an infographic, which is kind of a checklist in terms of like, are you ready to quit your job? I made this in like one of my very first newsletters.
Yeah.
And some of this I would change. I think the important bits are like saving some months of expenses. Like you need runway. You need an emergency fund. And like when I was having to lay people off at Loom, what Loom was telling me is that like they needed to increase their runway and like stretch how much their cash would take them. And like mm-hmm. everyone should be doing that with their own personal runway too, now that like layoffs are still very much happening in tech. Mm-hmm. I don't think replacing your full-time salary like before you quit is necessarily the right thing to do. Like you need something. You need some kind of income, some kind of plan of like where this income will come from. Health insurance for those of us in the US is always a pain in the ass. And so roughly understanding where your health insurance comes from, maybe it's your spouse or your partner who still works for a formal corporate job. And then like having some kind of plan. And what's interesting about this like last step for me is like I had a plan going into what I wanted to do. I wanted to do affiliate marketing on my website. I wanted to learn to code. I wanted to build my own like SaaS app, and like I'm doing none of that stuff. I'm doing none of it now. And some of it's so funny how that happens. That like you have a plan, you think you go into it, then you know, the old Mike Tyson quote, you know, you get punched in the mouth, and like everything changes. You know, like nothing is ready. But what's interesting is that the plan I thought would be good isn't the plan I'm following now, and like I'm still mm-hmm. successful in doing well because I'm kind of like going down the path of least resistance to like, you know, learning to code, but, you know, build a SaaS app as someone who has never coded before is like a big fucking project, man. Like,
yeah,
good luck, like doing that and like shipping that and like being successful. And so I was like, okay, I'll take that time and write instead. And that's kind of where the newsletter came from, is like the time that I was spending learning to code before I quit. So like, I would probably change this and say like, you don't need to replace your full-time salary. Maybe like 30 to 50% is good enough to make the leap. And then when you are full-time on this business, then you can go and grow that number even more. 3 to 6 months of expenses is probably a good amount. And like, what goes into that is like tracking your budget and, you know, all of that stuff, health insurance, you know, good luck.
Seriously, the marketplace. I'm on marketplace. It's awful. Yeah,
it's rough.
Yeah.
And then like having some plan, I think like having a plan is important. Of just like, you want to have an idea. I follow a lot of the like early retirement communities, and the advice there, you know, go figure. The advice there is like retire towards something. Like don't retire and then think, oh, I'm going to start golfing when I retire, or I'm going to start swimming, or I'm going to learn, you know, run a 5K or whatever. If you're not doing the thing before you retire, then like chances are you're not going to do that afterwards because you haven't like built in the reps. You're not as committed as you think you are to this thing. And so that's kind of like the point of having a plan for me, is like commit and like start now. So when you do it, you have momentum and you're not just starting from nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I completely agree. And the thing with plans is like, it doesn't matter how well you plan. It doesn't matter what you think you know. You will always learn more information or have events that will change your plans, no matter what you do.
Yeah.
It's just how it works. Like, plans are not set in stone. They're just like the bumpers in the gutters while you're bowling, you know? They just like sort of keep you on track, but that doesn't mean you're always gonna like get a strike every time, right?
Exactly.
Like,
yeah,
things will change. You might have to take multiple tries at the same plan, but you will always get there in the end if you take action consistently.
Yep. I 100% agree, and very lucky to be in that situation now. But I wouldn't be here if I didn't try, if I didn't go out and at least do it. I would just still be toiling away in some corporate job, like doing like okay, but like not being actually happy. Friday, I'm going to take off and go hang out with my parents. We're going to go run some errands together and get lunch. And like, I couldn't do that consistently if I wasn't like, you know, working for myself right now. And so, building the life that I want. I'm like living and trying to do that and sharing my story at earlyexit.club. So go subscribe, please.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah. Shout it from the rooftops. Where can people find you online?
That's good. Or find me on LinkedIn too. But yeah.
Yeah. Heck yeah. Thank you so much, Nick. This was perfect.
Rachel, this was awesome. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm super, super grateful that we met. And grateful that to have a chance to chat today.
Yeah, agreed. Hell yeah.
I hope by now we've convinced you that there's never really a right time to take a big risk, but there are things that you can do to make those career moves more sustainable and approachable. Head over to newsletter.earlyexit.club to sign up for Nick's totally free newsletter and find him on LinkedIn at linkedin.com/Nick Lafferty and give him a follow. You guys should definitely keep up with Nick. He is great advice for solopreneurs, and his newsletter breaks down some really complex ideas that can be really helpful for solopreneurs in a way that is like talking to an old friend. I really love it and highly recommend it. And I'm excited to talk to you guys again next week. We'll have an episode with Jenny Gritters, formerly of the Writers Co-op. She is a freelance writing coach and a freelance writer. And I can't wait to share my interview with her. You're going to love the mindset tips that we have for you. And you'll hear about how she makes her business work for her rather than the other way around. Stay tuned, and I'll see you down the trail.
This podcast was created and produced by Rachel Meltzer. The music is by Ketza from the Free Music Archive. You can find more information about the resources discussed in this podcast in the show notes below or on our blog at meltzerseltzer.com/blog. That's meltzerseltzer.com/blog. Also, while you're here, did you know that I offer courses and coaching for new freelance writers? Check it out at meltzerseltzer.com/coaching. Thank you.